Good morning and welcome in McElroy and Kubelik in the morning, Thursday, 7 a.m., October 21st. I'll give you some credit. You called this App State win last night. It was one that I didn't see coming. Especially after the way that App looked last week. But man, that defensive line was all over the place. Just really no time in the pocket for Grayson McCall last night. Couldn't find a way to deliver the ball down the field. Couldn't get the run game going. It's a great performance by the App State defense. Chase Price able to hit some balls. Got the run game going. Still some questionable third down calls for App State. And that happened last Tuesday night as well. But that was a strong bounce back game for App State. And it kind of makes me wonder here as we get rolling into this weekend of college football, because we've all heard the complaints. There are no ranked versus ranked matchups this weekend, but we've now had 48 AP teams lose this season. 26 of those have gone down to unranked opponents. And that started our weekend last night. So we will see how it looks, because there are not a lot of headliner matchups, but there are some that looked really tricky coming up this weekend. Rubik's Cubic at 9:30. We'll get to that. We'll have a couple of those that look a little dicey for a couple of teams. Not as SEC heavy as last week, but there are some potential upsets that look very interesting coming up. Austin Price will be with us at 7:30. He'll update us on some of the Tennessee injuries heading into the Alabama game. Of course, Wim Sanderson joins us every Thursday at 9 a.m. Your thoughts on that App game last night? What was wrong with Coastal, in your opinion?
Coastal's not that good.
Okay.
That's, I think, part of it. I think Coastal hasn't played anybody. App was pretty battle-tested. This is going to be by far the toughest test that Coastal had played up to this point. And then you look at the fact that App was coming off of a drubbing. If you look at App's record against after drubbings, they're a remarkably good bounce back team. In times that they actually gave up 40 plus points, they were 4-0 outright the following week. And they had, prior to last week's game, they had not given up 30 points in a game in their last 18 games. So last week was more of an anomaly than it was what App is, I think. And then when you look at what Coastal is, I think Grayson McCall's good. I'm not sure I see him as like an NFL franchise quarterback like some, but I think he's good. But I also think he's a little bit of a one-man show. I'm not sure their wide receivers are great. I'm not sure their running backs are great. I think Grayson McCall's good, and I think the scheme's really good, but I don't think they're anything special. So a little bit overrated, obviously, based on where they were last night. And I'll tell you another team needs to be careful. Nice, SMU. Okay. Just saying. I'm not saying that Tulane's going to win the game on the field. This team's 1-5. Tulane's a very proud football team. If you don't know that, watch them in the first game against Oklahoma. Watch how they battled in the second half. This is a very proud football team that has really, really had a misfortunate start to the season. They've lost to Ole Miss. They've lost to OU. Their only win against a Power 5 team, their only win this year was against Morgan State. They lost badly to Houston. They lost badly on the road to ECU, and they lost close to UAB. This is potentially a very dangerous game, I think, for SMU, if SMU is starting to read the tea leaves. Because you know that there's possibility, and I know that campus, I know that place well. SMU is playing on the road at Houston next Saturday night. SMU, Houston, Dallas, Houston. There's no love lost there. None. They hate each other. So there could be a little bit of a look-ahead situation here against a team that I wouldn't want to mess around with that's very proud in Tulane. So that's another one on upset alert tonight. I think you need to be real careful. You're the Stangs.
SMU 6-0 this year. They have been pretty good, especially through the air. Tanner Mordecai, the Oklahoma transfer, completing 71% of his passes, over 1,800 yards. We're six games in. He's 26-7 on the season. Touchdown to interceptions.
Yeah. He's really good.
I guess it helps when you throw 7 in the first game against Abilene Christian.
Right.
that'll pat him just a tad.
He can spin it now.
Stat pad there. But yeah, no, absolutely. And having a good year. But that's one that you get tonight, 6:30 on ESPN. FAU at Charlotte. That's a CBS Sports Network 6:30 kick. Louisiana at Arkansas State. Butch's group hadn't really been able to get it going there in Jonesboro this year. That's a 6:30 kick on ESPNU. And then San Jose State gets to check out the slot of fortune. They're at UNLV, a 10 p.m. Central kick.
Oh,
on CBS Sports Network.
Late night.
Mr. McElroy will be tired in the morning. Staying up for that one.
You'll see that momentum slot machine.
The momentum slot.
The momentum.
If I'm going to stay up, I promise you I'm staying up for football. I'm not staying up for baseball anymore. I can't have my heart ripped out again.
I was going to try to avoid it for you here in the first segment. But
you got to address these things head on. If you're going to sit here and let it linger, let's just get it out of the way. Here's what the realities of this series is between Dodgers and Braves. Braves are better. Dodgers are broken. Dodgers starting pitching has been subpar relative to their expectation level. Dodgers bats have been cold. Justin Turner's hitting a cool 110. He's our guy. Trey Turner's hitting a cool 110. He's the NL golden bat winner, whatever the heck they call it.
Silver slugger,
whoever has the batting champion is what they call it. He's a batting champion.
The golden bat.
All right. So he stinks. Gavin Lux is playing center field. He's played 11 games in his career at center field. He's had two very costly defensive plays. And this team doesn't deserve to win. I'm just being honest. If we somehow turn this things around, I would be more shocked than Braves fans. I really would. Because Braves fans are all like, oh, we've seen this story. We're not celebrating until the fat lady sings, until they weren't. You know what I'm saying? So I think that I would be absolutely shocked if the Dodgers don't get steamrolled either tonight or on Saturday, because this team has absolutely no business playing in the World Series. Not the way they're playing right now. Good team, great regular season, have a lot to be proud of. Great, you finish the top four, it's a good spot. But the Braves are the better team right now and deserve to go to the World Series.
Okay. Braves one win away from their first World Series since 1999. They had gone 12 straight playoff appearances without reaching the World Series. That's tied for the longest streak in Major League Baseball history. Teams with the 3-1 lead in a best-of-seven series, 75-14 all time. But
we've seen this before.
The last team to drop a series after being up 3-1 was the Braves last year in the NLCS to the Dodgers.
Yes. Which is why, unlike Braves fans, I'm not punting on the series yet. Because the Braves fans have experienced a remarkable roller coaster the last couple nights. You have the highs of the highs of being up 5-2 in the eighth inning. Oh, we're going to the World Series!
Yeah, get the brooms out.
Get the brooms out! We're going! Then you lose. Oh, series over. Series over. Dodgers. I had to give Braves fans a pep talk yesterday.
And then you had to scratch your starting pitcher yesterday.
Yeah. Yep. This is the worst thing ever. Smiley stinks. He can't do anything. We might as well just best of five. Let's go. All right. Got to win the next two. Best of three, excuse me. And then last night they win. Oh, we're going back to the World Series. Like, are you allowed back on the bandwagon after you jump off? Out of sheer curiosity.
Yeah.
Door's always open.
It's Atlanta.
Thing only travels about 3 miles an hour. Hop on, hop off, anytime. It's an easy journey.
Love that.
Eddie Rosario, two home run, triple, single on Wednesday. 13th player ever had 12 or more total bases in a postseason game. And he did it last night for the Atlanta Braves. Fifth player all time with 2 4-hit games in a single postseason. And joins Robin Yount as the only players to do it twice in a single series. So Braves are getting offense from multiple spots. They smashed the Dodgers 9-2 last night. It was one going in, as you know. Starting pitcher scratched before. Looks like you're going to have to go deep into that bullpen. Didn't really matter because the Braves' bats were on fire again. If you include regular season and postseason, the Braves have 54 homers this season by players that started in the 2021 season on other teams. Tied for the most such home runs in a season in Major League Baseball history. Those players account for 6 of the Braves' 10 home runs this postseason as well.
So
whatever happened in the offseason, it worked.
It works.
And all some of those moves that were questioned by folks in the offseason absolutely worked. Freddie Freeman hit his 6th career postseason home run last night, 4th versus the Dodgers. He is now 5-8 in games 3 and 4 with home run, 2 RBI, only 1 strikeout, 2 walks. He started 0-8, 7 strikeouts, no walks in games 1 and 2 of this series. You said it, Greg, that if Freeman came around, you'd be worried about it.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't really been the reason, but he has turned it around after a rough game 1 and a rough game 2. And he's been totally different since. And the Braves offense has just continued to roll. So, obviously, Astros take out the Red Sox last night as well. And other Major League Baseball action over in the ALCS 9-1. And now Houston leads this series 3-2, which has completely flipped. And the Houston offense just looks unstoppable again. So, got that going for you. And Braves, Dodgers tonight, 7:08, first pitch on TBS. I tried to avoid it. I tried not to go there for you. But you steered me right into it. I didn't think you wanted to do it this morning.
You don't run from it.
I address these things head on. I'm not weak.
Okay.
I address these things head on.
All right. I see.
Correct.
Let them know, Greg.
Some people might say that the college football slate this weekend is a little bit weak and not one that they're extremely excited about. I think there are some very intriguing matchups. Now, the one in the SEC, I would say, has the most intrigue would just be LSU-Ole Miss because of mainly what we just saw LSU do. I mean, this is a team that is still 12th in the SEC in rushing yards per game, yet they just walked out and walked off the field against what we thought was a pretty talented Florida defense. Of all these great LSU running backs we've heard, of all these great LSU running backs that we know about, and some that some people don't know about, like Cecil Collins or Rondell Mealy and other ones. Most rushing yards in a single game in the history of the program. They were able to do that. Now they get one of the worst rush defenses in the SEC. How are they going to be able to make that go? And with all the injuries on defense, Anthony, Ricks, Gay, Stingley, are they going to be able to piece it together again against a better offense than what they were able to do last week? I think going back and watching some of that game last week, Greg, we've had more games this year probably like this than I can recall in some time where if you just looked at the box score, you probably would guess the winner incorrectly. And I kind of thought that LSU Florida game last week was similar to that, because if you just look at the numbers, there's no way that you'd have thought Florida played as bad as they did. And part of the weird thing about that is I actually thought the LSU secondary played pretty good. And they had 4 interceptions. They made multiple plays on the ball. Now, some people look at it and say, well, 350 yards passing. They also threw for 4 touchdowns. All right, well, 1 Hail Mary right before the half.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's necessarily a breakdown on defense. So give you that one. So now you're around 300 with 3 touchdowns. So I thought it was actually based on the fact that your 2 starting corners are out and you got some guys beat up front. I thought the secondary and the defense altogether played a pretty good game. I'm not going to say great, but a pretty good game. And if that secondary can make plays on the ball individually consistently against Ole Miss the way that they did against Florida, LSU's going to be in this game. And I think LSU, I don't even think LSU's going to play ball control because I think they'll score by running the ball. So they may slow it down a little bit and slow the tempo down some. And I think it's an interesting game because I think now you got a team that maybe has found a little bit of motivation, whether they want to do it for Coach O, like go out on a positive note, whatever it is, they got a chance to come back and match up with the team in a different way that we know hadn't gotten a lot of stops recently and probably not going to get a lot of stops in this game. So it really comes down to that banged up LSU defense. What can they get enough stops to either be competitive or beat Ole Miss this weekend?
Well, the one thing that I'm not sure about is you referenced LSU running the ball. I don't know if they can run the ball. I mean, they did it last week, but that's the first time we've seen the run game from LSU all year, in which it was halfway decent, let alone decent, halfway decent. Last week was great, obviously, but is that who they are? Or is that more of a reflection of Florida not taking them real seriously? Is that who they are? Or is that just more of a reflection of Florida's being unable to be disruptive along the line of scrimmage? Because I really don't know the answer to that. Might find out this weekend. I don't think Ole Miss's defense is necessarily a world beater against the run. I think Ole Miss's defense is actually very gettable. But when I saw Ole Miss defense get gashed, it was quarterback run that really got after him. So it'll be real interesting whether or not LSU can run the ball knowing that Max Johnson's probably not going to be a factor with his legs. And it's not a game that I have a real good feel on right now. Obviously, if I had to pick it, I'd pick Ole Miss to win it. But I would anticipate LSU keeping it rather close. This is a rivalry game. This was a game last year that was less than ideal. And if if Matt Corral's less than 100%, does that have an impact on the outcome? Do they run him as much? Is the offense going to have the same level of octane in it as it would under normal circumstances? So a lot of questions to be answered this weekend for both teams. And this is a massive one for Ole Miss.
Absolutely.
Massive for Ole Miss. This is one that Ole Miss, I think, has to have because of what's in front of them and knowing some of the still difficult matchups against A&M and on the road at Auburn that lie in the very near future.
Yeah, it's interesting because you mentioned the Matt Corral runs and getting Matt Corral going on the ground. That was not the plan last week for Lane and Lebby and or Matt Corral. They know that he has good mobility. They know that they can utilize his legs with some design stuff and then also escapability. Lane talked to us about that and said that, you know, he tried to explain it to Matt by saying, you don't, because I asked him, I said, are you concerned about him not sliding as much? Like, does he need to slide more? And he's like, we talk about it every day. He said, it's terrifying. He said, I basically try to compare it as to, you don't go out and drive your car without your seatbelt on. He said, when you don't slide, that's essentially not wearing your seatbelt. Like, you've got to start protecting yourself. And Corral's just not going to do it. I mean, Corral's just, he's too much of a competitor. And he told us when we spoke to him, he said, if there's 2 or 3 yards to go to get the first down, and that's what I have to do to get it, I'm going to do that to try to get it. But there was not a plan for that many design runs in that game. It just presented itself, and then Tennessee really made no adjustment to it, kind of tried to spy him a little bit late, but even then didn't really matter because he kind of had that one-way go at the spy with a blocker playing an even front, playing four down. You're able to pick and choose your lanes a little bit more in an odd front, maybe by trying to add pressure with a fourth rusher, and that's why he just kind of kept going. And then some of it wasn't necessarily by design. A lot of it was, but not all of it. So if he is not 100%, like you said, you're obviously going to remove some of that, but LSU is pretty stout up front defensively. And I think that's an area that they could be, I mean, they're not healthy out on the edge, but you know, now they've got one of their original D tackles back in inside and Glenn Logan. So you're able to sort of beef up in the middle. That could help a little bit against some Corral runs, but I think it's an interesting game. Like you said, there's a lot on the line for Ole Miss. When you look at what's ahead and look at the potential of them sitting there being a one-loss team towards the end of the season, you never know what's going to be in front of you at that point. So, and then can LSU continue to that momentum, continue to find ways to move the ball on the ground and help Max Johnson? He needs that. I don't think Max Johnson's ready to be a 40-42 pass a game guy right now. He's not. That's not what they need to be, especially being a little bit beat up at receiver. But I know this. You asked the question. Is that who LSU was last week? All-time, single-game, leading rusher. Are they going to be able to live that way? Fair. I don't know that. What I do know is Ole Miss allows 198 rushing yards a game.
Ooh. Right.
I do know that. They live in the neighborhood of allowing everyone to run the ball on them.
That is accurate.
And it's a fact.
And there are not many homes in that neighborhood, the one that they live in. But they have been there for a while. And, yeah, they allow a lot of those. And so, because of that, I think you look at it and say, all right, LSU probably going to be able to keep at least a big portion of that going this weekend. SEC, other games, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, Mississippi State at Vandy. Is Vandy finding something after they test South Carolina? Not really sure. South Carolina's at A&M. It's tough to find a lot of ways that South Carolina's going to really be able to challenge A&M if they come out motivated. We've seen A&M come out flat. Saw it against Colorado. Saw it against State. We've seen it multiple times. But I feel like now, Jameer Johnson back at left tackle. That means Kenyon Green can slide to left guard because 2 weeks ago he was back at left tackle. You still have Laden Robinson at right guard. And now Fatherly's there at right tackle. So that feels like the group that they're going to have moving forward. A&M should roll, should cruise. But South Carolina brings a D-line and a couple guys on that side of the ball that are playing a little bit better than we thought that maybe could be problematic. I don't anticipate it, Greg, but that's
the game's going to be an absolute beatdown. I know it's your game, bro, and I love you. You can say the same about my game. That's fine. That game's going to be a beatdown if A&M wants it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that going into my game.
Right.
I'm not saying I disagree with you. I'm saying I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, nor should you. All I'm saying is I'll say it for those that aren't totally all in. If that game is close, it's because A&M allows it to be.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with South Carolina playing to their potential, But ultimately, it's going to be whether or not A&M plays to theirs. And yeah. if A&M plays to theirs, it could get sideways. But the thing about A&M is we haven't seen great A&M this year. So it's actually an interesting game to me because I haven't seen A&M's best but once. One time I've seen their best. And you could tell me, well, what about it in Missouri? Well, okay, well, Missouri, I think, defensively, is worse than South Carolina, so they will challenge you in different ways. So if you're not running it up and down the field, you don't score in your first two possessions in the first 4 minutes of the game. I mean, it's going to feel like it's more of a game. It's more of a dogfight. Now, they might not score, but if the score is 7-0 at the end of the first quarter, you're not going to feel like you're in cruise control. So I think A&M's a team that's a little bit front runner, a little bit, and I think that that could lead to some intrigue. For instance, South Carolina goes out, gets a good first drive, A&M has a three and out, South Carolina gets field position. Next thing you know, they're in a little bit of a defensive tussle. It wouldn't surprise me if we're in the third quarter and that game is still up in the air. So I think it's intriguing. I really do. But it's really not as much about what South Carolina does. It's really more about how A&M handles it. And based on how many young guys they're playing, I wouldn't be shocked if they handled it poorly. I mean, how many young guys are on their two deep? It's a bunch.
A lot
of young guys. So I'd feel worse.
South Carolina defense, by the way, a lot better than Missouri.
South Carolina's good on defense. I think they do a good job on defense. Now, I think
their linebackers have played a lot better than I thought this year because I've watched them more this week than I had all season. We were really worried about the linebackers coming in. They have been much better than anticipated. I did not expect that. Obviously, the defensive line has played well. Kingsley Ngbar, he's having a really nice year. He's doing good things. You're getting a couple of guys up front that are helping contribute there. That's a group that can be problematic for just about everybody that they play. And then what you really didn't expect was Jalen Foster having the kind of year that he's having on the back end of the defense. No one anticipated. I mean, even the coaches, I don't think, saw this coming from him, and he's playing excellent football. So that's a group that, I mean, I think it's one that's kept them competitive in some games. They've been responsible for them winning some games. And if the A&M offensive line is sloppy, like we saw it a couple of weeks ago early in the season, if they're not motivated, if they're not playing together, that's a group up front for South Carolina that can be problematic. And now they're not as bad second, third level as maybe we thought they were going to be. We just think about how decimated that secondary was.
Right.
You had a safety in a corner lead to go to the draft. You had a safety that started and played a lot for you go to Florida State. I mean, just there, you thought, all right, you had another one transferred to Jackson State. Like, you didn't really think you were going to have the numbers to even be decent. And they've been able to pull that together. So just another one that we'll be watching, obviously, in the SEC.
And it's the last game last week for A&M before the bye week. You know, so like sometimes that's a weird dynamic a little bit. Because you get the bye week next week, you're like, oh, we just got to get through this one. Just one more and we're home. Like, we get to take a deep breath.
There's no doubt that mindset sets in.
100%. I'm telling you, there's more intrigue, but it's more a mental intrigue to me in that game than it is a physical matchup. So that's going to be a unique conversation for y'all to have throughout the course of the game, especially if it's close. Like, why is it close? Because it shouldn't be based on the personnel. No. Based on the personnel, it shouldn't be. But if it is, y'all are going to have a heck of a good game to talk about. Stuff like that, because there's a lot of big picture elements that can be used and applied there and applied to other teams too.
All right, so we'll obviously continue to roll into games across the nation coming up this weekend in college football. Alabama-Tennessee, it could be very different if a couple of names are in the lineup for the Vols. Austin Price is going to join us next to tell us who he anticipates to be in uniform and on the field for Tennessee this weekend against Alabama. Right after the break on McElroy and Kubik in the Morning. Welcome back in, McElroy and Kubik in the Morning, 7:30 a.m. Thursday, October 21st. Tulane at SMU coming up tonight. That is a 6:30 kick on ESPN.
Do you like what I said earlier about Tulane having a chance? You're not buying that.
I'm not buying it.
Ah,
yeah.
Just not buying it, man.
We need Cranky Cole to take a nap. We need Cole to be a glass half full, silver linings playbook.
I agree with you with what Tulane is, and I do believe that they will fight. But they've kind of been worked over since that UAB game. I wonder if they're just out of gas. And Tanner Mordecai is going to move the ball. Like, they are going to complete passes. They are going to get points on the board. So, yeah, I just don't see it happening tonight. Not at home for SMU. It's a good stage for them. A lot to be excited about. I understand the look ahead possibilities, but no, I think they, I think they handle their business tonight.
I hope you're wrong. I just want to watch a competitive game. Last night was awesome. So I hope tonight can potentially deliver that as well. I'm Greg McElroy. I'm here for Be Dry. Your home's foundation serves an important purpose. Unfortunately, water can sometimes make its way to the foundation through cracks in the walls and mortar joints, up through cracks in the floors, sweating the walls, the footing, you name it. If you find standing water in your basement or crawl space, discover cracks in the foundation or see that your basement walls are wet, then you have a water intrusion problem. Fortunately, you have only one call to make, and that's to Be Dry. 60 years of trusted waterproofing and foundation repair. Get peace of mind by choosing the Basement Crawl Space Waterproofing and Foundation Repair Company, whose solutions are backed by the strongest lifetime warranty in the industry. That's why thousands of Alabamians have trusted Be Dry for waterproofing and foundation repair needs. Call Be Dry today so you can develop a permanent solution for you. Be Dry Waterproofing, dedicated to your satisfaction. 942-1976. That's 942-1976. Or you can learn more at BeDryAlabama.com.
All right, let's go to the Bud Light Hotline now. Welcome in Austin Price. Follow him on Twitter at Austin Priceless. He covers Tennessee for Rivals.com. Austin, start with quarterback Hendon Hooker, his status for this game. Just want to know what you think about the possibility of him being in the lineup. They obviously are a different offense when he is in the game. What do you believe the percentage chance is for him to be on that field Saturday night?
Well, when we left the field last Saturday night or Sunday morning, I thought it was extremely low. But Cole, he's progressively gotten better over the course of the week. There were no ligament damage. It all boils down to the pain threshold. It's more of just a deep knee contusion, just kind of a big bruise. He's practiced more and more throughout the week. He's handling a lot of the first team reps in practice. They've not made a final call on it, but it looks like he may just brace it up and be able to go Saturday night, because, you know, it's not like he can do really, there's no damage to the ligament. So all you're doing is just kind of maybe expanding the bruise if he takes a hit on it at this point. So I think there's a fairly good shot he plays, but I don't think they've made a final call yet.
That's music to my ears. I'm on the call for that game, and I think they have a much better chance, obviously, with him under center. So really, really glad that's the case, and glad also to know that there's no significant damage, even though those were the rumblings. Josh Heupel doesn't really go into too much detail as it pertains to injuries. So glad to hear that. If for whatever reason he can't go and it becomes more of a air it out, throw a thon with Joe Milton, are we convinced that it's Joe Milton? Because I know he started the year, but Harrison Bailey also started some games last year. So if Hendon Hooker can't go, are we for sure that it's Joe Milton?
I think it would be Joe. I wonder last week just how much, kind of credibility he lost in the locker room. I mean, running on the last play was bad enough, but jogging out of bounds like it was the second and seven in the third quarter, maybe the dumbest ball play I've ever watched in person. It was bad. And there were several balls that were not happy with him on the field right as the game expired when he ran out of bounds. I mean, Jerome Carvin, Cedric Tillman, they were very visibly upset with Joe Milton talking to him coming off the field. But I think so, because, I mean, Harrison at this point, I think would prefer to redshirt. So, he can play a handful of games. Do they use him in this game? Because they potentially could use him down the stretch. If they needed him. Yeah, I think it would probably be Milton to answer your question, Greg. I just think ultimately, they're going to try to preserve the red shirt for Harrison Bailey, and then obviously he'll have some options this offseason, because technically with the one-time transfer and with the COVID year and red shirting this year, he would be a freshman, a third-year freshman going wherever he went to next year if he chose to leave Tennessee at that time.
All right, so there are a couple of others. Austin Price of Rivals.com joining us on the Bud Light Hotline. I know Tyon Evans didn't really go last week. They were going to try him out before the game. Cooper Mays was going to sort of try to give it a go in warm-ups. He doesn't go. Elijah Simmons, defensive tackle, was out for that game. And then Cade Mays went down in that game, Tennessee's best offensive lineman. Any update on those, and how many do you anticipate to actually play for the Vols Saturday night?
Cade, I think, is trending towards not playing. He aggravated the same ankle that he had hurt last season. And so I think that ultimately he probably tries to rest up. They have the bye week next week. Get ready for Kentucky, a more winnable game, a game that Tennessee, you know, has a chance if they can win it, that would probably get them to 7 wins. Cooper, based off the people I've talked to, Cooper's practiced more this week than he has in the last several since he re-injured the ankle at Florida back in September. So I think there's a much better chance of him playing. Elijah Simmons, that one's still very much up in the air. And then Tyon Evans, again, has practiced more throughout the week than he ever did a week ago. Last week, he just worked on the side and did some running and cutting on the side with that ankle. Tried to give the go in warm-ups, but then quickly went back to his street clothes after warm-ups. So, you know, again, a week ago, he didn't really practice. He has put in some practice time this week, but I still would call him questionable at this point.
When you look at defensively, obviously it's a tall ask to play against Alabama and what they've done up to this point. Even in their loss, Alabama had plenty of opportunities to get to 50, which is pretty remarkable when you take that into consideration. How do you think the defense is going to hold up against an offense that has really hit their stride of late?
You know, the defense for Tennessee has been way better than most people thought. You know, I thought coming into the season they would be better than people were thinking just because everybody was judging it off the spring and they had no bodies in the spring. I mean, it was, you know, it was a group of walk-ons out there. Did I think they would be as competitive as they've been? No. I mean, you hold Ole Miss to 31, 7 of which you gave on a short field, 11-yard field. You know, you hold them to 7 in the second half. You know, Tennessee did a lot of good things against Ole Miss, but they've done a lot of good things all year long outside of that second quarter against Pittsburgh where they gave up 27. You know, I mean, this is a defense that, you know, was left for – heck, they weren't even left for dead. I mean, they were buried. They were buried and burned, you know, in the offseason with all the defections and everything. And then Tim Banks has come in as this, you know, kind of unknown and done a phenomenal job with an older group of assistant coaches like Rodney Garner and Willie Martinez, Mike Eckler, Brian Jean-Marie. So, you know, those guys are to be commended for the work they put in. They are facing a different animal this week. Alabama's really good on offense, much like they have been for the last several years. And, you know, can Tennessee do enough to bend but don't break? Can Tennessee do enough to maybe win the turnover battle again? You know, I think that goes a long way to kind of holding Alabama down. But you know, Alabama's going to score points. It's just, you know, how many stops can you get? You guys discussed last week, I mean, how many stops does Tennessee's defense need to be able to beat Ole Miss? And the same thing this week. I mean, just to be in the game in the second half, how many stops does Tennessee's defense have to get, you know, against Alabama's offense? That number to me would be fascinating to hear what you guys think.
A lot more than last week, I'll say that. And I don't know if I have the confidence that it's going to be able to happen just kind of based on what we've seen from both sides. Austin, appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. Look forward to having you back soon.
Hey, no problem, guys. And Greg, make sure if you have Joe McNish in the booth this week doing stats, grab a couple of his pens. He gets really anal about that.
Oh, yeah, we'll gas him up. I'm 99% sure he's with us this week. We have a different play-by-play guy, but I believe Joe McStats is with us. So we'll have some fun. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Austin. That's Austin Price. At Austin Priceless on Twitter. Covers Tennessee for Rivals.com. Joining us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste. When there's fun, Bud Light is there. One cool thing just I kind of wanted to throw out from a Tennessee perspective. Doesn't have a whole lot to do with your game, but some Tennessee fans kind of came together. I think Jason Swain was actually at the forefront of this, and they wanted to kind of match the $250,000 fine that was levied against them and raised that money to donate to East Tennessee Children's Hospital. And as of last night, I think they were over $108,000.
That's awesome.
So just kind of taking some negative, turning into a positive. Good for Tennessee fans for being able to do that and rolling that in there.
No, that's awesome. If you want to go to the game this weekend too, Tickets for Less is your local source for Bama football tickets. Find the best selection of seats without the added taxes and per-ticket service fees that you find on other sites at ticketforless.com. Call today, 205-758-1199. You can visit their office at 1410 University Boulevard or shop online at ticketsforless.com.
What can Tennessee do to complicate things for Alabama, and what Nick Saban had to say about this matchup heading into it? Next on McElroy and Kubik in the morning. 7:46 Thursday, October 21st. Cole Kubik, Greg McElroy in studio. Damian Mitchell back behind the glass. Conrad's back there helping us somewhere as well.
Conrad is here. We can confirm.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, oh, that's good. The van order's here. I saw him earlier. We spoke.
The order?
Yes. Yeah, spoke to him for just a second.
Order.
You can listen online, jocksfm.com. You can go grab the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, jocksfm.com. They're there as well. I want to get in Alabama, Tennessee just a little bit, and I'm trying to make an executive decision of do I go into the tweets directed at Greg McElroy this morning?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I am all in.
If they're from Hamilton, who
he does not like you,
has tweeted really? At me 18, he has 18 tweets on his account. All of them have been directed towards me. I'm not going to spend too much time worrying about it.
Hey, just going, hey. he's got a lot of hate in his heart.
We're going to hold those.
Save them. We'll mean save tweets.
They are, a couple of those are from that gentleman who's big mad at Greg. Your Twitter, I don't want to call it an apology, but your Twitter humble pie last night, attempting to compliment the Braves, that was not enough for Hamilton.
I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's just the facts. Like I said, if we were the better team and lost, I'd be salty.
You literally have to just say go Braves.
That won't happen. Yeah, I will never do that.
Well, that's a wrap.
Well, that's the easy thing to do. That's what everyone else does. No, that's what everyone else's footprint does.
Look at there.
Oh, wait, hang on. Wait. Oh, they're up 3-1. I'll take the Braves.
No, look at there.
You're not helping yourself here.
Good.
9 hours ago, McElroy tweeted, I wish I could be salty, but the Braves have been awesome. The Dodgers have been terrible. Better teams dominating. Simple as that. Got to tip the cap to the Braves. Gut-wrenching loss last night, had no impact. Win a bullpen game like this against 111-win team is impressive as heck. To which Mr. Hamilton responds, absolutely not, period. Not accepting the humble approach. Has to be something like, quote, guys, can you believe I had my own name embroidered in my Dodgers jersey? What a loser am I? I should have known, being a loser, that the team I cheer for are losers. Also, I'm sorry, Braves fans.
Goodness gracious.
I would not anticipate that one coming anytime soon, but yeah.
Oh man, okay.
That probably isn't going to happen.
Nah, it ain't.
Don't think we're going to be getting that one.
Hopefully, none of his four followers are mad at me. hang on, never mind.
It's deep pool, right?
Zero
there.
Followers. Never mind. Ah, my bad.
So literally,
surely not.
Nobody's seeing it.
We see it.
We see it. Like that's it.
Oh God, it is zero. Never mind. Why are we reading this?
Because he doesn't have an egg. That's a me problem. He doesn't have an egg, Abby.
That's a me problem. That's my fault. I screwed that up.
Didn't read the room.
That's not. Tap the chest on that one.
In fairness, I was already told. I already said that I would be glad to eat humble. I would be glad to eat crow if we lost. 100%. The best part is we have the Braves right where we want them, and they know it.
We've seen this movie before. We've seen it.
Okay. That snap sailed on me. Wet ball. My bad.
get a dry ball in there.
Yeah.
We
will move on. All right. So Tennessee, Alabama, where can they be complicated? I'm not saying that I think Tennessee wins the game. I don't think they can win the game. Don't think they will, but where can they be complicated? If Elijah Simmons is back, I think that could help. He would give them a little bit more beef, a bigger body in the middle of the defense. Matthew Butler is playing good football. He is one defensive lineman inside, 94 for Tennessee. He kind of gets them going, and he's a guy that can disrupt and cause some problems on his own. One issue, I think, for Tennessee, you go back and watch A&M, they had a lot of success on the edges with individual pass rushers. Tennessee didn't really have that guy.
No.
They kind of try to rotate it between Tyler Barron, Byron Young, Roman Harrison.
Leave the program the last couple of years. I mean, I feel like they had a couple edge guys that were pretty disruptive that aren't there anymore.
Yep. One down playing for Miami this year, so it would have been nice to have DeAndre Johnson there. But they don't really have sort of that guy. And I think because of how Alabama manages and handles things, it's very beneficial for you to have that guy. You know, the secondary is not bad. Alante Taylor plays pretty good football. Jalen McCullough has been all right.
Yeah.
You know, Theo Jackson's a guy that moves around a little bit. He can be a star, a nickel. He probably should be playing corner, but because of their numbers, he moves around a little bit. And I'll say, Greg, the second level's been better than I thought it was going to be. Jeremy Banks, once he got going, has been pretty good. Aaron Beasley, comes down, plays the run well. But, you know, not having Juwan Mitchell is going to hurt that group. So I just there are not a lot of individuals that I feel like are going to be problematic for Alabama with this group. Now, that being said, structurally, they actually play pretty sound defense. You're not going to see them busting coverages very often. You're not going to see guys that just aren't home. You know, they do play hard. They do get multiple hats to the ball a lot of time, but they are just individually don't have a lot of guys that are going to be a problem for Alabama.
Right. And the problem with a game like this for Tennessee is that Alabama, if you're going to beat Alabama, you better win your one-on-one matchups. That might be up front. That might be outside. That might be your guys outside against their guys. If you can't win one-on-one matchups consistently, you're going to struggle. That's the way it's going to be. It's the way it's always been. And the teams that have won those games, won those one-on-one matchups. I mean, A&M, most recently, won several one-on-one matchups. So will that happen this weekend? Just like we talked about with your game, I want everyone listening to this radio show to watch the game and cheer on your boys, A&M and South Carolina for Cole, yep. Tennessee and Bama for me.
Attaboy.
Bama's going to have to screw it up. A&M's going to have to screw it up.
Yeah.
The good news is, if you're looking for an upset, both teams are pretty dang young. And both teams, how do they handle success? I mean, that's the only way to look at it. How do they handle success? Because right now, everyone's telling A&M how great they are. Everyone's telling Alabama how great they are. Oh, they're back. All this other stuff. Sometimes that can have a negative impact on people. And we'll see if it does for those two teams. I don't think it will, but we'll see. The other thing about Tennessee, I am pleased to know that Hendon Hooker is going to be available because I think he is by far their best option, even at less than 100% at quarterback. So that would be the silver lining if you're a Tennessee fan. But you're going to have to force a couple turnovers. You're going to have to hit a couple big plays. And you have to do a really, really, really good job. Really good job of making sure that when you blitz Alabama, because that's probably the only way you're going to get a pass rush, when you blitz Alabama, your guys are covered up in the back end. Problem is, Bryce Young does a great job against blitz. So it's a catch-22, man.
Yep.
It's a really, really difficult thing. Because the only way I think you can really get home against Bama is if you have a super dynamic edge rush that can work against Chris Owens.
And they do not have that. On the flip side, Alabama does have super dynamic pass rusher. And it sounded like, basically, when Austin joined us in our previous segment, that Dane Davis most likely not going to be it. Or probably is going to be starting at right tackle for Cade Mays. He actually got a little bit better as the game went on, but he had a couple big whiffs early and really struggled. Which, listen, if you're a tackle and you get thrown in the middle of the game,
right,
that's a tough spot.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with guys humming off the edge. Because Cedric Johnson for Ole Miss, he didn't get a lot of pub, but he's a mobile kid. He can get upfield. He's got some twitch. And Sam Williams is a very good pass rusher. So not a ton to be ashamed about there, but Cade Mays is their best offensive lineman. They need him. And if he's not there, big advantage for 31 and whoever else is lining up out on the edge for Alabama. Doesn't sound like Drew Sanders is going to be back again this week. But then, you know, the rest of that offensive line has actually done some good things. If Cooper Mays is back at center, that allows Jerome Carvin to go to left guard, and that needs to happen because when Ollie Lane is in, I think Tennessee's offensive line takes a bit of a step back. And Darnell Wright's been pretty solid at left tackle. I love Spragans at right guard. The guy has very limited athletic ability. He is not super talented, but good Lord, he gets after you. I mean, he is a finisher.
How come if a guy just wants to fight?
He's a scrapper. Absolutely. And I absolutely love
him. If a guy is flirting on the edge of a 15-yard penalty on every snap, give Cole 10 of those.
Here's the thing. Spragans doesn't have a quarter of the talent that Alabama's offensive linemen do, but if you gave me five of him, we're going to win some games. We'll move the ball just because we will set the tone.
Well, and we're gonna have guys retaliate against us, and the second guy gets flagged every time. So we're gonna get some 15 yards in our favor too.
Well, okay. We'll figure out how to manage that. Maybe. All right, when we come back, intriguing games coming up this weekend, begin to take a look at a few of those.